How's it going, everybody? It's the Vinny V here with the Vinny V Sports Report. We are joined here with a very excited guest, Bill Barnwell, a longtime subscriber to figure4online.com, and also, in a strange note, my supervisor with footballoutsiders.com, a man who can judge me better than perhaps anyone else. So, Bill, how are we doing?
I am the boss of Vinny's no job, I suppose.
he's the boss of an unemployed man, yes. Yes, as you noted, the Cardinals have just scored. By the way, before we get into this, I figured, hey, we'll just do a show during the playoffs, and I'll just record the game. I'll have Bill tell me what's going on. I got the NFL.com scoreboard thing here. Let me know what's going on. I thought I would be okay. This is a mistake. And I knew immediately, as soon as it hit the two-minute warning the first half, and Atlanta had just made an interception, and I had to leave. And I thought, boy, this is a mistake. And I jumped in the car. There are two all-sports radio stations in the Seattle area. One is playing the Washington State basketball game. I turn to the other one. It is playing the Washington State broadcast of the Washington State basketball game. This is the best argument for satellite radio I have ever heard.
Wait, hold on. Is Brent doing the commentary for any of those games?
not to my knowledge, no. He's probably listening somewhere and critiquing. But, no, I have not heard from Brent in a while, actually. So, let's review this the first half before we get into this game. It's, for those of you not paying attention, shame on you, but it's the Atlanta Falcons at the Arizona Cardinals, and I am one of the very few people in the world who thought the Cardinals would win this game, and it's coming true sort of the way I figured. Arizona's wide receivers are making not a ton of big plays, but the big plays they're making are huge. Larry Fitzgerald made a catch on a flea flicker in the first half that was one of the most amazing plays you will ever see. That guy is astounding. It's ridiculous how talented that guy is at his size. And then on the Falcons came with a seven-man blitz later in the second quarter, and this left Lawyer Malloy in man-on-man coverage with Anquan Boldin. That's bad. That's very, very bad. And Anquan Boldin caught the ball and ran what I believe was a 71-yard touchdown. Now, the Falcons drove down. They were getting short pass after short pass. And then finally, Michael Turner scored on one of his very few good runs in the first half. Then they got the interception of the two-minute warning. Then I had to go. So, Bill, what happened after that?
I hate to do this to you, Vince, but you just about covered it.
Well, I know Atlanta got a score there in the end, after 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I actually did not see that either.
Oh,
I was actually sprinting around the house trying to figure out where I was going to get good cell reception, so I did not see that either, but I assume that something good happened.
Well, I appreciate you making that sacrifice. Fortunately, there's a little button here called play-by-play, where at least we can see who scored. Ryan has a touchdown pass. It was apparently to Justin Peel, because this is his stat line. 2 catches, 5 yards, 1 touchdown, long, 3. So it was a short pass.
Beautiful line right there.
Yeah, so that put Atlanta ahead 17-14 at halftime. Then the second half begins. Riders were starting this, and just as I went to see turn the TV off and come in here and get the show started, I see, I believe it was Antrell Roll recovering a fumble?
I believe so, yes.
He recovered a fumble. There was a botched handoff, and it went right into his hands, and he sprinted about 20 or so yards into the end zone, and I thought this was awesome. He then broke into the Dirty Bird.
Wow.
Yes. We're going not just mocking Atlanta, but mocking Atlanta old school.
Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty insulting for, you know, a guy who wasn't even a good enough cornerback to stay in his position after being a top 10 pick.
No. But, you know. But hey, celebrate the little things. So,
yeah. Exactly.
I expect next they will mock Billy White Shoes Johnson. That'll be next on the docket. So, yeah, this game's pretty exciting. And also, I have Anquan Boldin on my playoff fantasy team. So, things are going well for me so far.
That's very disappointing. And I think the funny thing about the Cardinals' first half is that if you look at the scoreline, you know, they were down 17-14, but it seems like they also outplayed the Falcons. But at the same time, both touchdown passes weren't exactly great plays. The flea flicker was a throw into double coverage where Brandon Larry Fitzgerald made an incredible catch, but that's not a good decision. You generally don't want to throw in a double coverage, even with Larry Fitzgerald there, because, you know, if the ball doesn't get to Larry Fitzgerald, he can't catch it. And there's a good chance that ball would have been tipped or picked had, I believe, Chris Houston was in coverage, had whoever the cornerback was not slipped at the last moment. And the touchdown pass to Boldin was a well-designed pick play, but most of the success in that play was the safety taking an awful route to the ball, and I believe it was Lauren Malloy getting just absolutely trapped behind Boldin, and it turns out that Boldin is going to win a foot race against a 108-year-old safety.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't actually a great half for the Cardinals, but those two big plays really stood out.
Really? I'm looking at here. They have about 180 yards of offense, and about 110 of them were on those two pass plays. So,
yeah,
yes.
And I mean, you know, if they can pull it off every game, that's great. You know, they'll they'll have a really successful playoffs. But realistically, they're not playing that well. You know, they're struggling with blitz pickup. I mean, they're doing some good things defensively, but the Falcons are pretty consistently moving the ball down the field. And if it wasn't for a huge, huge Roddy White drop, they could have been down 2 touchdowns, or they could have been down 10 points as opposed to down 3 points at halftime.
Yeah, I had a vision on that drop. Atlanta's been they're having trouble passing because Arizona's getting a great pass rush, and part of that is because they're going offsides over and over and over again. And the refs are letting them get away with it. But they finally adjusted, and they started throwing swing passes and bubble screens and short hitches. And then it was you know, the classic cliche of working the body to and then going with a big shot to the head. And the big shot to the head in this case was Roddy White on, I believe it was a crossing pattern. And he was open 30-some yards downfield. The pass basically hit him in the face mask, and he cannot pull it in. And all I could think was, if Michael Vick is watching this at Leavenworth somewhere, he just jumped to his feet and shouted, "That's the Roddy White I know."
Funny thing was to hear, you know, I think it was Chris Collinsworth say something about how, you know, Roddy White's really broken out with Matt Ryan in the lineup. And the funny thing was, last year Roddy White had a great year. It was just that no one noticed because it was in, you know, the post-Vick year, and no one saw.
The maelstrom, yes. He's been good for 2 years in a row now, but he had some bad drops in his rookie year. Yeah, and I'm looking at this now. It looks like... Are you watching the game right now?
I am. They just called offsides on the Falcons.
I see... It says... here it says penalty. Game. Delay of game. To set up a third and 25.
Third and 25. Now, see, well, what I've always said, and what I think is really a sound idea, is that if I was an offensive coordinator, I would make my playbook only have plays for third and 25. Because there's so many times you hear about, oh, you know, the playbook, no one has plays in their playbook for third and 20 or third and 25. If my playbook was all third and 25, I would be very successful.
Just because it would come up so often.
Exactly. Because I don't have any plays for first and 10, so I'd invariably get in second and 20, third and 25 situations. And then third and 25, I'd pull out my Freddie Mitchell play, and I would be in good shape.
Freddie Mitchell play, yeah. So your playbook could be nothing but deep posts, jump balls, and hook and laterals.
And then I can hire Mike Holmgren, and I can add the Max Strong draw.
Ooh, very good, yes. Which is another, well, the problem there is that you'll have plays for third and 25, but they won't work.
No, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, see,
never stop the Seahawks, though.
Your plan is flawed. Well, he's gone now, and I just saw a commercial. They're airing the final Mike Holmgren show tonight.
Wow. We just had a play where there was a punt, and whoever was back to field the punt was just tackled before the ball got to him. which isn't allowed in the rules, as far as I know.
No, you know, it's funny. Atlanta did set a record this year for fewest punt returns allowed. Fewest punt return yards allowed. They allowed 40 some yards throughout the year. And I watched in the first half, it was like, well, it's clear why. They cover punts really, really well. And every time a guy caught the ball, there was someone in his face immediately. And apparently they jumped the gun here.
Yeah, Thomas the Cow just leveled Steve Breston before the ball got to him.
Now, I have loaded up here your the fantasy playoff draft we had. Really, this so far is not a horrible day for you. You have Kurt Warner.
Solid.
You have Neil Rackers.
Also good.
And you have Michael Turner, who's not having a good day, but he did have a touchdown.
There we go.
Yeah, so you're going to be ahead of me after this day. I have Anquan Boldin, but no one else I have is playing this weekend. So
the thing for me is that each year in this playoff draft, this is the third year that I've done it as a member of Football Outsiders on the website, and each year my team has sucked miserably, and that really is frustrating for me because I'm supposed to be like our sort of fantasy expert.
Right? That's right.
I do a lot of the fantasy writing we do, and that really, you know, it frustrates me because last year the best team, the best players to pick in a playoff fantasy draft have been, you know, the guys from the Giants last year or the guys from the Colts the year before or the guys from the Steelers the year before. Each year they're wild card teams, and with any playoff draft, you're inclined to think, okay, well, I'm going to take guys from the number one team or the number two team because, you know, they're most likely to play three games as opposed to a wild card team. So this year, I basically threw every concept of what I would do out the window and just picked whoever I thought was the best guy available.
Now, see, I made what I think is a mistake in that my draft consists almost entirely of Giants and Titans. So there are the top teams. Yes, they'll should likely get some significant playing time. It's probably the most likely Super Bowl matchup right now, although it's still, you know, it's not like the odds-on favorite or anything. But more importantly, if either of those teams is upset in their first game, I'm done.
Yeah, and what Titans did you draft exactly?
I'm sorry?
Which Titans did you pick?
Chris Johnson.
Okay, good.
So I was very happy about that. Lendale White, which was not my plan, but when the third round came along, I needed runners and receivers, and he seemed like a better option than anyone in either position. And then I drafted Justin Gage almost as a joke. But
yeah, really?
Exactly. Well, part of it is that from a playoffs perspective, this is a horrible draft for wide receivers.
Yes.
Because of the top four teams, well, the Titans and Giants at this point basically have close to no one. The Panthers have Steve Smith, and they have a pretty good chance to get at least one win in there. It's kind of the same thing with the Steelers. They have Hines Ward, but I can also see either of those teams losing in their first game.
That's also true.
And then you get in the first round, and really, there's three great receivers playing today in Bolden, White, and Fitzgerald, and at least one of those guys has done it for one game, and perhaps two.
Yes.
So, yeah, wide receiver this year, there was just nothing for the playoffs. There's just nothing solid to go with. And at the same time, most of the top teams were also running back by committee. So there was it's Adrian Peterson, I guess you did end up with him, but there's no Terrell Davis this year.
That's true.
There's no dominant runner on a great team who you know is going to play at least two or three games and is going to get 20 carries every game. So, yeah, so there's a lot.
Now, Vince, let me ask you, did you play in any fantasy football leagues this year?
I did not.
You did not? Okay, so that's one of the things that also affect your playoff drafting selections. Now, if you are playing in a playoff fantasy draft, you're inclined to avoid players that may have burned you in the regular season.
Or you're inclined
to maybe take players that you picked in the regular season in the hopes they're going to continue doing well. Like, I had Michael Turner in a league this year, so, of course, I wanted to have Michael Turner again because I enjoyed, you know, the fruits of his labor all season. Whereas if I picked, I don't know, Plaxico Burress is a bad example, but, you know, if I pick Edgerrin James, for example, I'm probably not going to want to pick him again because he's already burned me once this year. So you're coming in with a fresh slate, which may be an advantage for you.
Could be. Now, the flip side of this is that, as noted, my roster is based heavily on two teams. I have Bolden, as I noted. I have Heath Miller from the Steelers as my tight end because, well, why not? Because I needed a tight end, basically. But I'm of two minds now that I've had a few days to think about this. My first thought is that if either of these teams gets knocked out early or even after just one win, I'm probably screwed. But then I thought if you have a diverse roster, if you have, you know, what do we have here? 8 total slots, I think. 9 total slots. If you have spread that out over like 5 teams, you're virtually guaranteed to have just a mediocre point total.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It almost seems like the best bet is just to pick a team or two. And again, I thought of this after the fact. It just kind of worked out this way for me. But your best bet seems to just pick your team or two, go all in with them, and that's the only chance to finish in first place.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the optimal strategy. You're guaranteed of mediocrity if you choose otherwise.
Right.
Now, Neil Brackers just horribly missed the field goal by what appears to be about 5 feet. that's kind of disappointing. You know, it's not like it's a difficult surface to play on in Arizona.
No, they were talking before the game about how it was voted the favorite field in all of the league by the players. They were talking about how, you know, it's just the retractable field, it's grass in great condition, and it amused me when Tiki Barber said this. I think it was Tiki Barber, but he noted, it's perfectly flat, which I understand that most, especially in outdoor stadiums, most fields are not flat, and the stadium in Dallas had that, just the enormous crown in the middle, but
yeah,
it, just someone broadcasting, it's completely flat, as a selling point for a field service, just made me laugh, so...
Yeah. Did you notice that Tiki Barber was a sideline reporter today?
I did see that.
Isn't that, you know, how the mighty have fallen? Tiki Barber's gone from being a potential Hall of Fame running back to basically being, you know, the poor man's Aaron Andrews.
Now, you're a Giants fan, Bill.
I am a Giants fan, that's true.
How does that, how do you feel about Tiki these days?
You know, I mean, I was never as down on Tiki as I think some people were, you know, when it comes to the whole... Oh, you know, his chemistry was causing trouble within the, you know, the locker room. I don't really feel like that was the case. The fact that he retired, I mean, it sucks for him. It was awful timing on his part, you know. He was definitely one of those players who, you know, started as kind of a third string back and didn't really have the chance to succeed and finally kept getting more opportunities. And I think the biggest thing was that Tiki Barber was a really exciting breath of fresh air when it was 97, 98, 99, and the Giants were running guys like Rodney Hampton and pre-Raiders Tyrone Wheatley and Charles Way and those guys into the line over and over and over again. The Giants had a really, really boring offense.
Was that the Dan Reeves years?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Where it's just, you know, 350 carries for your running back, just lots of punts, really, really awful offense. So when you actually have, you know, a guy like Tiki Barber who was catching the ball out of the backfield, who was speedy and explosive, you know, that was a really, really welcome thing when even, you know, our wide receivers were Chris Callaway, really, you know, just possession receivers up and down the field, tight ends who weren't that fast, just a really boring offense to play with in Madden. And Tiki Barber was a fun player in Madden, so I think that's why I kind of had that those positive feelings towards him for a long time.
There's always that, too.
Oh, it goes a long way.
Yeah, but it was mostly just nice to have a, you know, that on 3rd and 6, you actually had, like, a swing pass to the halfback as an option.
Exactly, and my favorite player of all time, and I think that another guy that you're a big fan of, Vince, is Larry Centers. And so, you know, Tiki Barber being kind of a better Larry Centers is a pretty cool asset to have for my favorite football team.
Yeah, Larry Centers was a pretty dang good player, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone say he was my favorite player of all time.
He was my favorite player of all time because he succeeded, and it was like nobody noticed. You know, like every year I feel like in my fantasy league, I would pick up Larry Centers in week 2, and end up with like, you know, 100 catches or like 80 catches for 800 yards. And
he got 100 at least once.
Yeah, I mean, he'd always be a valuable player.
But it'd be 100 catches for 700 yards, and usually most of them, I'm sure, if we went back and watched the tape, I'm sure of those 100 catches, probably 50 or so of them would be losing in the fourth quarter by 2 scores.
Dude, dump off, that's the thing about fantasy football. Dump offs count just as much as great plays. And you know what? If you don't use that to your advantage, you're a bad fantasy football player. Larry Fenders with a really great asset as a 12th round pick or a free agent pickup, and I picked him up, I think, 3 years in a row. And each year I ended up trading him for, like, an actual valuable asset. So he became my favorite player.
You know, I'm looking over the stats for this Falcons-Cardinals game right now. It's amazing how opposite they are. Matt Ryan is 20 of 29 for 148 yards. He's got 7.5 yards per completion. So he's completing everything, but none of them are big plays. And then the one big play we talked about earlier, White dropped it. Then you look across the way, Kurt Warner has 6 completions today. In 17 attempts, so he's completing about a third of his passes, but he's got 150 yards and 2 scores. He's got
that is magic of missed tackles.
The magic of missed tackles, and yeah. In fact, I'd have to do the math, but he's got more yards just on those 2 long touchdowns, almost. He's got 110 yards on those 2 plays. Matt Ryan's got 148 yards on his 30 passes.
Wow.
He just threw another incomplete, and then the Falcons punted. So, yeah, it's a dink and dunk versus the kind of the Joe Flacco bombs away attack right now.
Exactly. Now, Vince, what do you think about Bruce Springsteen playing the Super Bowl?
You know, yes, for those of you who don't read Football Outsiders, I started a war earlier this year when I complained about Bruce Springsteen being named the Super Bowl halftime act. I believe I called him something along the lines of old and washed up. Or if not those exact words, it's certainly worse to that effect. And I knew when I said it, someone somewhere would be angry. And it turns out there was a lot of them, and a lot of them were very angry. And I've got a friend from Jersey that he didn't talk to me for a while. Mike Neers from Philadelphia, of course, he was not thrilled. Someone else on the board was also – or sorry, on the board. Someone else on the staff was not happy with me. But I have I must say this. It came up over the past month or so. When the Bruce Springsteen version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town comes on the radio, it is impossible to not be in a good mood. You have to be happy. And I kind of wish Aaron was here right now. We could ask if that crossed religious lines. But I think Christian, atheist, Jew, Muslim, you hear Bruce Springsteen saying Santa Claus is coming to town, you will be happy. So if he does that song, hey, great.
I'm not going to touch that one, but I'm going to ask you, Vince, what would be the ideal halftime show set up for you?
I thought the Kid Rock got wiped out by Nipplegate, but I enjoyed the Kid Rock Puffy and Nelly show that we got in whatever year it was, 02 or 03.
The Kid Rock one where he was wearing the American flag?
I know a lot of people were upset with that. A lot of people thought that was tasteless and tacky and offensive, but from a musical standpoint...
I mean, realistically, if you're worried about Kid Rock being tacky and offensive, I think you have maybe bigger concerns.
Yeah. I think it would be a good idea to try to find musical acts that the players themselves might be listening to.
Like Lil Wayne, pretty much.
I think Lil Wayne would be awesome.
Well, let me tell you a story. I was covering an NFL event for IGN, and I was at a hotel for the show, and a few of iTunes on your computer, you can look at other people's iTunes libraries. And a bunch of people's iTunes libraries popped up when I accessed the hotel internet, and one of them was Dwayne Bowe. Who's the receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to interview Dwayne Bowe later. Let me see what's on his iTunes. His iTunes was 3 Lil Wayne songs. It was very disappointing. I was like, that gives me absolutely nothing to work with.
You should, You're hoping for maybe some Toad the Wet Sprocket on there?
Yeah, exactly. Like something like, you know, like I could really get at, you know, the secret essence of Dwayne Bowen and be like, yeah, you're a real big Bette Midler fan. I was kind of surprised by that. And have
yes.
to be like, wow, you really did your research. I'm really impressed. But no, just Lil Wayne.
A Lil Wayne over and over and over again.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. So why don't we talk about a lot of people, I gave you an introduction, but some people may not be familiar with you. And why don't we talk about you a little bit and what you've done? You mentioned you work with Football Outsiders now. You're a full-time football website writer guy.
Yes, I'm actually a professional football writer, which seems very strange to me, but I'm very lucky. I was in the right place at the right time and just, you know, generally try and work hard. But I'm work on Football Outsiders full-time. I write columns each week for ESPN. During the regular season, I think two or three columns a week, usually two, sometimes three. I've written for everywhere from New York Times to, or been quoted in everywhere from the New York Times to Wall Street Journal, San Jose Mercury News, a lot of big newspapers. And right now I'm exclusive to ESPN, and I worked for IGN previously. I've done everything from, work there to I worked for Kaiju Big Battle in college.
Did you really?
Yeah, I've gotten around. I was a road agent for one Kaiju Big Battle match.
Wow.
Yeah, because Kaiju Big Battle matches need road agents.
I guess so. Huh.
I got around. I've done some pretty interesting stuff in my career, and now I'm working for Football Outsiders and writing about football full time. So it's a pretty fun job.
And how old are you?
I'm 24.
That makes you want to cut my head off.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I was lucky enough that I was in the right place at the right time, and especially with sports journalism. 10 years ago, when I was in college, when I went to Northeastern, I was in college about 5 years ago, and I was switching majors, and I thought, you know, I could be a journalism major, and I could go cover high school sports for a while and really, you know, slowly work my way through things, or I could, you know, do something else and hopefully end up, you know, doing something cool. And I think realistically, if I was a journalism major, I'd be covering, if I had a job, which I probably wouldn't, don't take that personally.
Oh, no, I'm well aware.
I'd be covering high school sports. I'd be covering high school lacrosse, and that's not really very interesting to me. So I got lucky and, hitched my ride to a pretty awesome blog, and it's grown bigger, and I've been lucky enough to do this full time now.
No, I'm fully aware of just how useless a journalism degree is these days. Believe me.
It absolutely does. I mean, I'm a communications major, so communications are even more useless. When I left college, I was working for American Express as a customer service agent, so
yeah.
I got lucky to be in the right place at the right time.
If I had to do it again, I would just skip college, just learn a trade. Carpentry, plumbing, electrician.
You'd be a blacksmith?
Something along these lines, yes.
That
skilled labor is the way to go, everybody. Make yourself useful. That's my little advice there. But it was comedy. The day I learned I was losing my job, my first content thought was, oh, what the hell? Maybe Aaron Schatz at Football Outsiders, maybe he needs an assistant. And so I sent him an email asking, and 90% of this was a joke. And I asked, hey, you wouldn't happen to need any full-time assistant, would you? And he said, oh, wow, I just gave that to Bill.
Yeah, that was bad timing.
That was bad timing. And then you said, well, you should apply with IGN. And I did, and I never heard back. So, oh, well.
I'm not going to comment on that, but I don't think you've... Well, I guess you don't have to be too much to be upset about, from what I hear.
Things okay. I will not ask you to say anything you may later regret, but yeah.
Yeah.
It, interesting times here in 2009, so... I suppose at some point we should talk about some of these other games that are going on this weekend. The Chargers and Cardinals play tonight. Who do you like there?
Well, I would like the Colts, who are the 13th playing tonight.
Did I say Chargers and Cardinals?
Yeah, you did.
I'm going to start that over. Chargers and Colts play tonight. Who do you like there?
Hey, I still like the Colts.
Still like the Colts, okay. And are you? Was that a tortured decision for you as it was for most people?
Not really. I mean, the thing is, if you look at our statistics, our main stat is called DVOA, and that's just basically, very quickly, in a sentence, it's just measuring the performance of each play against the league average after you account for down, distance, situation, and opponent. So the Colts and the Chargers are pretty much identical when it comes to DVOA, and you would figure that the Chargers have an advantage because of the fact that they're playing at home, but realistically, the first game this season between the Chargers and the Colts, which was basically an even game, the Colts were missing Bob Sanders, and Bob Sanders goes a long way with that team. If you think about the 2006 season, his impact was a little bit overstated, but it's very reasonable to say that they won the Super Bowl because Bob Sanders had a really, really great playoffs, and there's no reason to think that he's not going to make a huge, huge impact on that team, whether it be plugging holes in the running game, whether it be eliminating Darren Sproles on the screens in the passing game. And we don't know at this point when we're recording if LaDainian Tomlinson's going to play tonight, but I think either way, Bob Sanders is going to have a much bigger impact than anyone the Chargers will be bringing back as opposed to the previous game this year.
I made predictions on the blog at VinnyV.com, the Vinny V Sports Report blog, and I recapped an argument I had, not so much an argument, but a discussion of this game I had with a friend at a bar the other day, and I was listing all the reasons, all the things the Chargers had going for him, like, and at the time I was not aware of Tomlinson's health, but he seems to have been playing better towards the end of the year, and it was Philip Rivers who led the NFL in passer rating, and Peyton Manning was like fifth, and yes, that's passer rating, which is a flawed stat, but it's not, you know, it's not completely useless.
There are worse stats.
I'm sorry?
There are worse stats than quarterback rating. It's kind of an esoteric random stat where it's kind of hard to figure how people started actually taking it seriously.
Yeah, there are worse stats. There are better stats, such as DVOA. But and I thought about the Chargers playing a 3-4 defense and how that's given the Colts troubles over the years. And I listed the Colts' win streak has basically included wins over a bunch of nobodies and close wins over teams like Cincinnati and Cleveland. And I think they blew out Cincinnati, but there were some very close wins in that streak. And I gave all these reasons, talked for like 3 minutes, and there was a pause, and then my friend said, "But the Colts have Peyton Manning." And I thought, God damn, yeah. He's right.
Peyton Manning goes a long way. And the thing is, I mean, as much as you can say that about the Colts, the Chargers won 8 games in the AFC West. Weren't they like 5-1 in the AFC West and 3-7 otherwise?
That's probably about right. They had nail biters over the Chiefs and the close loss to Denver that should have been a win, but it still would have been a close win over Denver.
Exactly, and I mean, you know, their season came down to having to recover an onside kick. An onside kick, when the other team's expecting an onside kick, they get recovered 16% of the time. Now, that's a worse bet than anything you'll do in Vegas. It's an awful, awful situation for your team to be in. The fact that they got it is incredible. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's not a good play by them, but just it's very unlikely. And then certainly looking at them and saying, okay, they're a great team, you know, because they came back the last few weeks, that's just not reality. And I mean, right now, Mike Shanahan is unemployed because Dwayne Bowe dropped an onside kick.
That is strange to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very slippery slope. You know, you can point to that and say, okay, well, if they had won this game or that game, you can do that with a million different things, but the fact of the matter is, when it came down at the last moment, you know, the last little moment of truth for the Chargers was that game. And if they don't get that onside kick, they lose that game, and they're out of the playoffs. And Norv Turner is actually out of a job as opposed to Mike Shanahan.
I see that Tim Hightower had just scored from 4 yards out to make it 27-17, pinning the extra point.
Yes, that is what Tim Hightower does. He runs the ball from 3 or 4 or 5 yards out, and that's all he does.
He's actually got the ball a couple of times in this drive, and we are looking. Yeah, here's the Edgerrin James for 2, Edgerrin James for 6, Warner to Spock for 5, Edgerrin for
Spock?
1.
Wait, Spock?
How do you say that? SPACH. He's a tight end.
No, I have no idea. It would be cool if they actually had Spock on their team.
Wouldn't it, though?
That would be tremendous.
Edgerrin James for 1, Warner to Smith for 4. Kurt Warner scrambles right end for 6 yards, tackled by Keith Brooking. Now there's a foot race.
Oh, God. How long do you think that play took? 12 seconds, 30 seconds?
A great question. Edgerrin James for 10, Hightower for 3. Yeah, so this is my point here being Arizona has found, they found the singles. They found the Ichiro Suzuki to their offense. They were all big play in the first half, and now they found the secret to dinking and dunking and finally getting in from first to go from the 4. They converted 4 third downs converted on the drive.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, if you can do that, awesome. You know, the thing with the Cardinals that I'd be worried about if I was a Cardinals fan or I was betting on the Cardinals or something like that, you know, the Falcons defense isn't really that great. You know, when they're going to have to play the Giants defense, they're going to have to play the Eagles defense, they're going to have to
yes.
play, you know, a much better defense in the second round. And I would be concerned about that if I was a Cardinals.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The reason I picked Arizona in this game is because Atlanta had the worst defense of any team in the playoffs. And I thought Bolden and Fitzgerald would have their way, and to a degree they have.
Yeah, and realistically, this year as a whole has been a very offensive year relative to, you know, what we'd normally expect for NFL stats. But like you said, the defenses that have still held up have been the teams that have made the playoffs this year. So, you know, basically there's no team in these playoffs that are not going to be able to score points. Maybe the Ravens. I'm a little bit worried about Joe Flacco. I'm down on him relative to a lot of other people, but you know, any team in this playoffs can score. It's really the teams that have the best defense this year, at least, that are going to stand out, I think.
Well, let's talk about the Ravens. They play the Dolphins tomorrow. in the game that will probably feature more unbalanced offensive lines than any game in since at least the merger.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is fun for me, just because it's you know, NFL offense, that when you compare it to the college game, where you've got the flex bone and the wishbone and the spread option and you know, the power eye and pro sets, and it's very diverse in college. Whereas NFL, really, when you break it down, there's the Mike Martz, Don Coryell stuff and the Bill Walsh stuff, and that's really about it, it seems.
Yeah.
And this year we have seen the Wildcat, we've seen Kansas City going with a pistol, we have seen every team has some package where a non-quarterback plays quarterback, and then you have Baltimore, who's putting both tackles on one side of the line and just running over people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really cool to see that diversification of offenses, whereas in previous years, you know, everyone lines up in the I formation, everyone lines up with split backs, and we saw it last year to an extent where Green Bay started running the full house, which is two fullbacks and a halfback behind them, and this year that spread to Atlanta's done it very well, and Carolina's used it very successfully, and, you know, it's really cool to kind of see that stuff happen, and I'm kind of wondering what we're going to end up seeing next year, because now that the Wildcats kind of, you know, not come and gone, but everyone kind of knows how to defend it. Wow, Matt Ryan just threw an awful interception.
really?
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is kind of weird because we're doing this while a game is on. Matt Ryan just threw a lob pass into very tight man coverage, and I think it was Rogers Cromartie picked it off.
He threw a sloppy.
Actually had a step on him, but Matt Ryan underthrew it by about 3 yards.
Who was the receiver?
Roddy White was
another missed big play by Roddy White. Yeah, he has an interception in the first half. I don't know if you saw it, but it was also a horrible throw forced into about quadruple coverage. So
well, this was man coverage, and White actually had a stop on Rogers Cromartie, but Ryan underthrew this pass. I mean, that pass needed to be 5 yards out in front of in front of Roddy White, and that's one of the things that rookie quarterbacks I think do more than veteran quarterbacks is they miss in the wrong places. Not to say Brett Favre doesn't throw a pass in the wrong spot from time to time or every game, because he does, but that pass needs to be overthrown, if anything, not underthrown.
I see. Yeah. So do you have a prediction there for the Baltimore-Miami game?
I do. I'm going to say the Ravens. You know, they played earlier this year, and the Ravens definitely outplayed the Dolphins en route to a victory. And the biggest thing with that game was the Ravens had Ed Reed, who wasn't 100%, who was questionable, but because he was the only healthy member of their secondary, he played. They had him shadow Ronnie Brown the entire game. So when Ronnie Brown would go in motion, Ed Reed would follow him. If Ed Reed played very little zone coverage, it was very much man coverage on usually Ronnie Brown, but sometimes Ricky Williams as well. And every time they'd take Ed Reed out, they ran the Wildcat. So they ran the Wildcat about 6 times, and I think 5 out of the 6 times, Ed Reed was on the sideline. So if Ed Reed's in the game the entire time, I don't think they're going to run the Wildcat. And if Dolphins don't run the Wildcat, I don't think they have much of a chance of moving the ball on the Ravens, realistically. I don't think that Chad Pennington has, you know, I think he's a great, accurate passer, but I don't think he's going to have the time to stay upright. I don't think he's going to have the time for his receivers to get separation deep to, get it passed downfield. So I think there's going to be the Ravens defense is going to stifle Pennington. I think there's going to be quite a few sacks and probably a couple fumbles and, I think the Ravens are going to end up winning probably by about 10 points.
You know, it's funny. I was aware, I was looking into this last night, I was aware that Miami had, you know, they were in the AFC East where there are a bunch of good teams, I think you could say, in that division. And they played the NFC West, which is horrible, and the AFC West, which is horrible. So basically everyone in that division had their record kind of inflated.
Exactly.
And then I looked, two fun facts. One, there was a 3-week stretch in November where the Dolphins beat the Raiders, the Seahawks, and the Rams, three horrible teams. The Dolphins beat them by a combined 8 points. That kind of got my attention. I thought, wow, maybe this team's not that good. And then I was looking a little further. The one thing Miami did better than anyone else this year was hang on to the ball. They were number one in fewest turnovers. They only turned it over 13 times. And I thought, well, so all they really did was not screw up, wait for the other team to screw up, and then it's capitalized. And it worked because they were playing teams like the Raiders and Seahawks and Rams and Chiefs, et cetera, et cetera. And now they're playing Baltimore, a team that is prone to a screw-up or two, but they're going to force some. Miami, you know, 13 turnovers, that's less than one per game. I would bet a lot of money that they would get at least one turnover in this game, probably two.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that that we found in our research of Football Outsiders is that fumble recoveries are a random act. And if you think about it, you know, it's hard to imagine, but it's the truth. I mean, if you look at it year to year, there's no team that consistently does better or worse than any other team at recovering fumbles.
Right.
If a team forces 40 fumbles and they recover 27 in 1 year, and they, you know, they force 10 next year, you know, that's a skill. I mean, forcing fumbles we think is a skill, but recovering fumbles in general tends to regress to the league average, about, you know, 50%.
Yes, forcing fumbles is a skill. Hanging on to the ball is a skill. Recovering fumbles, it's largely luck, and some people get a little, I don't know if angry is the right word, but they like to talk about hustle and desire and determination and say that's a factor, and it is, but at the same time, it's the old cliche that a football is a funny-shaped object that takes strange bounces.
Exactly, and I mean, think about the Ravens-Cowboys game this year, where Derek Mason had a ball bounce, you know, from the ground into his arms, basically, you know, slipping out of Ken Hamlin's arms. It was, you know, if I was ever going to say that NFL game was not on the level, that would have been the play where I would have said, okay, Ken Hamlin just gave the ball to Derek Mason. You know, fumble recoveries, again, you know, you can say hustle and you know, Lovie Smith's getting his guys to go to the ball until the whistle's over, and that's true, but, you know, every team's hustling. Unless you're
yes,
the Rams
or the Raiders, Lions.
Given up, or the Lions, and you've given up, every team's hustling to the ball. You know, every team kind of knows what they're doing. So that's really just more of a narrative that's kind of created by, you know, coaches to sort of inspire their guys to maybe try a little bit harder, but in the end it doesn't make much of a difference.
Then our last game for the weekend is the Eagles at the Vikings. The game where no team can possibly win. The two teams in the playoffs, in spite of themselves, the two teams most likely to self-destruct and shoot themselves in the foot, which is a poor metaphor to use for a Giants fan, but we'll get to that later. But that being said, I think if there's one team in the NFC playoffs that can knock the Giants out, it's probably the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles
and it's easy
dominated
to say
the Giants at home.
Yeah, they beat them a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, they thoroughly outplayed the Giants, and it wasn't one of those games where, you know, the Giants ended up getting a late touchdown and make it look closer than they were, but the Giants never looked like scoring, and that is a really, you know, as a Giants fan, that really worries me, considering how impressive the Eagles' pass rush can be when they are, you know, playing like the Eagles as opposed to playing like a team that doesn't know what they're doing, which they do about once every few weeks.
Yeah, can I assume that, do you agree with me that the Eagles have the best chance of beating the Giants?
In the NFC?
In the NFC, yes.
And NFC, yes. Yeah. In the AFC, I would say the Titans and the Ravens have a better chance of beating the Giants.
What about the Steelers?
But in the NFC, I think definitely the Eagles have the best shot at beating them. And you know, with regards to the Giants and the Eagles, I mean, you could have gone last year, and if we were having this exact same conversation before the Buccaneers-Giants game, I would have said, well, you know, you can't trust Eli Manning because he's going to have one of those games where he throws four interceptions and three of them are returned for touchdowns. And you know what? He managed to hold it together for 4 weeks enough that the Giants win a Super Bowl somehow. And the fact is, you know, the Eagles could put it together for four games and be the best team in the league, which our ratings think they are. You know, and if they're not the best team in the league, they're certainly one of the top teams in the league, and they certainly have the talent to beat any team on any day. They could put a four-game stretch together. It's not impossible. And, you know, in hindsight, if we, you know, go back after the Super Bowl and the Eagles have won and we say, okay, well, after that Ravens game, they just took a huge step forward, you know, we don't know that right now. It's really going to depend upon if they can hold it together, and honestly, no one can say that, you know, regardless of what, you know, what sort of narrative they want to create or what sort of, you know, information I think they have, or, you know, you can't look at momentum and things like that because they're not realistic trends on a larger scale, and we don't know what the Eagles team is going to do.
Yes, this is a team capable of winning the Super Bowl in the same season they tied Cincinnati, which is... That would really be the capper on what has been the weirdest year that I remember.
I mean, last year the Giants beat the Dolphins, I think, by like 3 points, and you know the Dolphins were 1-15.
Yes, it was.
Possible.
They got crushed by Minnesota. That's the game that I always go back to. They got beat up bad by Minnesota, as I recall.
Yeah, and Eli Manning, I think, threw four picks, and I believe three of them were returned for touchdowns. And in this book, I did a lot of research on the Giants. I wrote the Giants chapter in the book this year. And Eli Manning had one of the worst four-game stretches or five-game stretches in the last 15 years for a quarterback.
Yes.
You know, of anyone. And then, like, we're talking the Ryan Leafs of the world and the Achilles Smiths of the world. Those guys had, you know, had I think, two of the three or four worst stretches than Eli Manning. But you don't think about that for your Super Bowl MVP quarterback, but it happened. I mean, he was absolutely atrocious.
There's the playoffs out of the way. Peyton Manning, MVP. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't really know about that one. I mean, I was writing about this actually in week six and week seven, where the Colts were about 500, and I said actually in one of my ESPN columns that Peyton Manning is going to get a lot of support later in the year because of the strength of the schedule he's going to face over the last 5 weeks. And he played the Lions and the Bengals, and He didn't play the Titans, who were the best pass defense he would have faced all year. The Steelers would have been, the Titans probably actually would have been the best pass defense he would have faced, and he would have faced them twice, but because they played them in Week 17, he got to skip out on one of them. You know, he played one of the easiest schedules of any quarterback, and that schedule was tilted towards the second half of the season, so it looked like he was playing his best football in the second half, when actually, you know, he was probably playing a little bit better in the second half, but nowhere near as much as his statistics actually, his raw statistics like yards and touchdowns indicated, so... I wouldn't have given it to him. There are a lot of guys you could have given it to. I actually would have gone for Ed Reed, and the reason why is because of the dramatic amount of injuries that Baltimore defense faced, especially in the secondary, where they started Chris McAllister, Ed Reed, DeJuan Landry, and Samari Roll at the beginning of the season, and by halfway through the year, all three of those guys were out except for Reed, and Reed was questionable every week, and Landry's been out for the year, McAllister's been out for most of the year, Roll missed about half the season. I mean, he's been incredible. He's been a one-man show in Baltimore. And for that team to, you know, with that difficult of a schedule to make the playoffs is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I actually would have guessed that a defensive player was going to win because we talked earlier about in the fantasy draft discussion, all the best teams this year do not have offensive superstars. And you look at the team, the players that are, you know, the highest-rated guys, this guy's like Cutler and Rivers and Breeze and Warner, guys who either missed the playoffs or just barely sneaked in. And it was a strange year. And so they went with a guy who was on a team that was good and whose numbers were good because there were no other candidates.
I mean, you know, one of the pieces I wrote for ESPN in the past couple of weeks was looking at historical trends for, the guys who won the Super Bowl. And obviously, or from who won the MVP, I should say. And most of them are quarterbacks. So, you know, it's not a surprise that Manning was chosen, but I think, it's always been a quarterback for a team who's won the division, and Manning didn't win the division this year. And it's always been a team that, or a quarterback who was, you know, in the top three in fantasy points as a position. And I don't think Manning ended up being that high. You know, Manning really...
he was like fifth in yards and sixth in touchdowns or something, so I'm sure it wasn't any higher
than
that.
Really, that was top three. And I mean, you know, to have, you know, Manning win that award is not unprecedented, but over the past 20 years, it's pretty close to it.
I actually would argue it is unprecedented. Just, the only one that I can think would come close to, based on those standings, was there was one year when Manning and McNair tied for the MVP.
That's exactly the one I was going to say. Yeah,
McNair
won half the trophy McNair also had a different reputation. He had the reputation of being, you know, the guy who would play through or bruised anything to, you know, suit up for his team. Or Manning, you know, Manning's been hurt this year, and he certainly got, you know, a leader reputation after winning the Super Bowl, but he doesn't really have the same kind of reputation that McNair does. And realistically, you know, there wasn't an obvious candidate to give it to besides Manning. I would have chosen someone like D'Angelo Williams, perhaps, who led the league in touchdowns and had an awesome year, including two really great performances in primetime. I would have considered Ed Reed. I would have considered even Troy Polamalu, James Harrison, and if the Cowboys had been in the playoffs, DeMarcus Ware. But, you know, it has to be someone to make the playoffs, and top candidates are guys like Breeze and Ware, who, you know, their teams, despite their great efforts, didn't make the playoffs.
How about Adrian Peterson?
I don't know about Adrian Peterson, man.
Our numbers don't like him very much at all.
Well, I don't know about that. I think relative to what our statistics say about him, which is that he's an average running back, you know, I think he's better than that because our stats don't realize how awful the team around him is. But, you know, Peterson, he does bust a lot. You know, he doesn't really have a lot of, you know, consistent positive yardage. He will have a lot of drive stall relative to other running backs because he'll put teams in 2nd and 10 and 3rd and 9 situations while he's trying to make plays. But, I mean, he won the rushing title. Obviously, he's doing something right.
He won the rushing title on a team that won their division. And just based on that and the dearth of other qualified candidates, I thought he'd finish higher than he did. But I think in the voting was actually a runaway. And that also ignores, by the way, his other weakness, which is a grotesque inability to hang on to the ball.
Yeah, and against really crappy teams, too. Like, I remember I kept recommending, oh, you have to play Adrian Peterson this week. He's playing the Lions or the Rams. And it seemed like half his fumbles were against the Lions and the Rams, like teams that he should have been able to kill. But he was, you know, he would fumble the ball inside the 5, and I'd be like, Adrian Peterson, you are breaking my heart right now.
Yes. He finished with really nine fumbles in the year. I don't think any other runner had more than 6.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it was really odd considering. I think he fumbled maybe 9 times, and I don't think he recovered very many of them either. I think they lost the ball on a lot of his fumbles.
Yeah, they may well have, and perhaps that's the one time when the mainstream media kind of looked past the overall numbers to think, you know, fumbles are bad. a very important stat that's gone pretty much ignored over most of the past 100 years or so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a really easy way to, you know, give the other team some points is to fumble. You know, not only in cost your team points, and having a lot of touchdowns is great, but, you know, I can't say, you know, three fumbles are equivalent to, you know, losing a touchdown, but you're giving points away when you're doing that, and that's not going to help your team.
So with the end of the season, we've seen some coaches fired this year. Romy Crennel gone, Eric Mangini gone, Marinelli gone, Mike Shanahan gone. And the one guy who still has a job that I'm stunned by is Marvin Lewis.
I thought you were going to say Herm.
See, Herm, a lot of people say Herm. I think Herm basically just got a free pass this year. I think they went to Herm and said, look, this is a rebuilding year. We're a very young team. And then his top two quarterbacks both went down.
Yeah, but I mean, for the Bengals, you could say Carson Palmer got hurt. And Chad Johnson went crazy and never really came back.
I I'm down on Herm is a very, very bad football coach on Sundays. I think during the week, I think he's a great coach. Motivation can be overstated, but I think, you know, he gets his players to play hard. They were in every game this year long after several teams, such as the Lions or Bengals or Rams, would have thrown in the towel and just showed up and collected their check. And the team went down fighting. I think that does say a lot for him. I think he gets a free pass this year. And he is a coach who has had success in the past. He took the Jets to the playoffs, as I recall. I know they were close. And I think when he first got to Kansas City, they did okay. Marvin Lewis has had the one playoff year when Carson Palmer got hurt early in the game and they were done. And he has not had another winning season in Cincinnati, and it seems like they're on a severe downward trend.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they had a lot of injuries this year, and injuries go a long way in determining team performance. But, you know, he's really struggled to rebuild that defense. And for a guy who was known as a defensive guru, that defense sucks. And they haven't got better. They've spent multiple first-round picks on guys like David Pollack, who had a condition that prevented him from playing football on a regular basis. Oh, Matt Ryan's about to go down for a safety. Oh, no. Matt Ryan was about to go down for a safety and just got... No, he did get a safety.
Uh-oh. That would make it 30-17. So
that is not good.
That's still not over. That's still two touchdowns, and there's still about 12 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So stranger things have happened than an Atlanta win here, but it looks like they're going home.
So. Well, it was a questionable call because Ryan was still up, and he was trying to get the ball off, but they... apparently gave the guy a sack, even though Ryan was still upright, which is, you know, one of those judgment calls that are very questionable.
The in-the-grasp rule.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if you remember, you're probably too young, but in the 80s, they call that thing every single time.
Yeah, I was six when the 80s ended, Vince.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. But I guess that's about it. We discussed the playoff games. We talked about the MVP. We talked about coaches. We talked about this game here in Atlanta. Any thoughts? I guess it's a little too early to do previews of next week's games, but how about a Super Bowl pick? If you're going to pick teams right now, give me Team X over Team B in the Super Bowl.
Oh, Vince, you're killing me.
Yeah, I it's impossible this year.
I will say that the Ravens will make it in the AFC.
Okay.
I really like the Ravens, and I will say that the thing is, like if I pick the Giants, I know they're cursed to lose, and if I don't pick the Giants, I'm going to have to be upset if the Giants actually do. And so I'll just say the Giants and the Ravens make the Super Bowl, and the Giants will overcome the specter of the awful, awful, awful Super Bowl in...
That's right.
I believe it was 2000. Or no, it was 99.
It will be... No, 99 was the Rams.
Oh, sorry, 2000. You're right. Yeah.
But yes, they did have a brutal Super Bowl that I remember nothing of the actual game, except Baltimore killed them. I remember Trent Dilfer threw a pick six that was called back in a penalty. And I remember reading reports after the game from Paul Zimmerman and Sports Illustrated and a few other very detailed writers who were like, they charted every game, and they noted that Ray Lewis made every single play he had the opportunity to make, and they had never seen a performance like it before.
Yeah, Ray Lewis was good, and Jason Sehorn, it turned out, was not good. Brandon Stokley, who, again, is not... He's white, so obviously he's not the fastest wide receiver on the planet.
But he works hard and has great hands.
He is a fan favorite.
Good route runner, yeah, fan favorite, exactly.
But yeah, he burned Jason Sehorn on, I believe it was a go route, and that was not pretty. That was like, okay, we know we're doomed. And yeah, there was an interception return where I think it was Jesse Armstead got a penalty for a really awful Jicky Tech holding penalty away from the play. And yeah, it was just a mess.
Yeah. Well, I think we're just going to do it then with the Cardinals. They're up 13, and they have just... they're about to get a kickoff here, so that's where we're going to leave things. I want to thank Bill for joining the show. Anything else you want to plug while you're here?
I'm not going to plug my site, but I'm going to plug my friend's site here. My friend's actually just put together a wrestling site. I believe the URL is youcanpowerbombkidman.blogspot.com. I'm going to plug that site today.
youcanpowerbombkidman.blogspot.com.
Yes, sir.
Everyone, go type that in and then bookmark it so you never have to type it in again.
There you go.
So cool. All right, Bill, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of the playoffs, man.
Thanks. My pleasure. Nice talking to you guys.
Thank you very much, Bill, for joining us. I want to remind you all to go to VinnyV.com or VinnyVSportsReport.com and check out my some of my writings. I discussed a lot of what we talked about in the show here today. I talked about Peyton Manning's MVP win, previewed the wild card games, where it looks like I'm going to start off 1-0, so that's very great news. Discussed about coaches that have been fired, who should be fired, and a little more in-depth look at Herm Edwards and the Chiefs' year and why I think he should at least get another chance. We got to look at Jim Mora, who's going to be taking over the Seahawks next year, how I expect he'll do. And then a link to some of these writings I've done for Football Outsiders, which actually, as I'm looking at this, I am a little behind. I need to add a link. So I'll add a link there to the Scramble for the Ball column we wrote, where we had our playoff fantasy draft and a recap of how we did picking over-unders, over-under totals for each team at the beginning of the year. My co-writer and I, Ben Riley, predicted how each team would fare. And there's a recap there, and you can laugh at my failure, which is not as severe as Ben's failure, so at least I beat him. But I do want to thank you all for listening, and we will be back next time.